Now have arrived on the ground to coordinate at the tactical level with the U.S. and with our allied partners. This will help get Canadians, Afghan nationals, and their families to safety. Two Canadian Armed Forces C-17s will be making regular flights into Kabul to support evacuation efforts. Yesterday, alongside Ministers Mosef, Sajjan, and Mendocino, I met virtually with members of the Afghan-Canadian community. The images we've seen out of Kabul over the last few days have been heartbreaking. I told the community we would do whatever it takes to support the people of Afghanistan. We will continue our efforts at evacuations, and I know that Canadians from coast to coast to coast will step up to support Afghans, to support resettlement, welcoming people who will build better lives, not just for themselves, but for all of us here in Canada. My friends, it is so good to be here in BC with Mayor Haynes of Saanich and our outstanding Liberal team. I'm also very happy to be joined by Sherry Moore Arthur, our next Liberal MP for Saanich Gulf Islands right here. And a big shout out to Nikki McDonald, our candidate for Victoria, and to Doug Kobayashi, our candidate for Esquimalt Saanich Sauk. Sherry, Nikki, and Doug, I know how amazingly passionate you all are about the environment and about protecting a better future for our kids, about arts and culture, about helping small businesses, and most of all, about the people here on the island. You will be strong voices for your communities and for all Canadians. It is so good to have you on the team. I also want to say what a pleasure it is to be back here for some personal reasons as well. Many years ago, I was here to visit my grandmother, Kathleen Sinclair, who stayed in this residence. And from the conversations I just had with the seniors and residents here, it's still an extraordinary place to care for seniors. This is a part of the country I know very well. I always talk about my BC roots. Well, they are particularly poignant right here because I have my my two aunts, Betsy, two of my aunts, Betsy and Heather, who are here with me. Betsy and cousins and nieces as well. Yes, I see you guys. It's great. It's been a year and a half where people haven't been traveling as much, haven't been seeing family as much as I'd like to. So it's great to be able to take a little time with them after this important event. But I do want to talk about my Aunt Betsy, who runs the Brentwood Bay Nurseries not too far from here, has for many years, but is also a registered nurse who has been stepping up during this pandemic, as so many have. And my Aunt Heather actually was my inspiration and my mentor when came the time for me to become a school teacher. It is so good to see her and so good to be able to remember how important family is and, quite frankly, caring for our loved ones and our elders through this difficult time and into the coming years. Because when I had a chance to speak with residents here at Veterans Memorial Lodge, I got to thank a number of them directly for their extraordinary service to Canada, not just as people who've worked hard all their lives, but also in a number of cases, people who'd served, including in World War II. It is unbelievably important that as a country, we recognize their service, that we recognize how important it is to care for our elders, all of our elders, and be grateful for everything they have done for us. This past year and a half has been incredibly difficult. Nobody could have expected what was thrown at us. This pandemic disrupted our lives, brought far too much loss and sacrifice, but at the same time, Canadians stepped up because that's who we are. As we watched our kids struggle, missing school days and birthdays, as our frontline workers were challenged with the new situations that we were trying to grapple with every single day. So our businesses were desperately worried about all that they'd built up and all they had to offer the community that suddenly were put on hold and threatened with collapse. And of course, our seniors, who were the most vulnerable in this pandemic, for whom we needed to continue to be there as they were concerned, afraid, and increasingly isolated. But Canadians stepped up, because that's what we do. We're there for each other. We support each other. We listen to each other. That's been the story of this past year, but that's been the story of this country for much longer than that. That's why in this moment we need to continue to be there for each other. For everyone who's gotten vaccinated, thank you. For those of you who haven't yet, yes, like you, ma'am, make sure you do. It's the way we protect each other. It's the way we protect our kids. And have those conversations with friends who are still hesitant or still worried. I know they're not always going to be easy conversations, but we need to make sure that everyone gets their vaccination so we can get through this pandemic once and for all. Look, COVID-19 wasn't something that we expected as a government either. But we knew that the way to get through it was to stay true to our values, because that's what Canadians did too. The only way to move forward was to keep people safe and to have everyone's backs. Quand la crise a frappé, on a été là pour les travailleurs et les familles. On a été là aussi pour les aînés qui étaient les plus vulnérables. Et on a tous travaillé ensemble pour faire ce qu'il fallait aussi longtemps qu'il le fallait. Quand on nous a demandé de l'aide, on a déployé les forces armées dans les centres de soins de longue durée. On a fourni du soutien sur le terrain avec la Croix-Rouge canadienne. On a envoyé de l'équipement de protection individuelle et on a aussi mis jusqu'à 875 $ directement dans les poches des aînés vulnérables admissibles pour aider à les soutenir pendant la crise. Et bien maintenant, c'est le moment de finir notre lutte contre la COVID-19 et de rebâtir en mieux. Et surtout, c'est le temps de se dire qu'on va tous collaborer, tous ensemble, pour que les tragédies comme celles qu'on a vues dans les centres de soins de longue durée n'arrivent plus jamais au Canada. This pandemic laid bare unacceptable and heartbreaking conditions in too many long-term care homes across the country. The seniors, the families, you're right. You deserve so much better than what we saw in too many places across the country. Think about it. We had to send the armed forces into retirement homes. In Canada, the situation was so heartbreaking and so dire in so many places that we had to resort to extraordinary measures. Well, it shouldn't take a crisis like this to highlight what unfortunately too many people have known for too long, that we're not doing a good enough job everywhere across the country to support our seniors and our loved ones. Those are the conversations I had with families throughout this pandemic and since. Families who lost loved ones, who were devastated, who saw their loved ones isolated, alone, and so scared. Well, as a country, as we move forward, as we learn the difficult lessons of this pandemic, we must make sure that tragedies like this never happen again. That's why a re-elected Liberal government will work with provinces and territories as partners to do even more for seniors and those who care for them. We're going to build on the approach we know can be successful, our progress together on creating affordable, high-quality childcare spaces. We recognize that childcare is a provincial area of jurisdiction, but we also knew that the federal government could and needed to step up to make childcare affordable across the country. Because Canadians agreed that we needed to support families to make sure women could get back to their job. So provinces, territories, and the federal government worked together and are continuing to work together to get that done. And I know we can use this model to deliver results for seniors, too. On sait que la situation est différente dans chaque province et territoire, et c'est pourquoi on veut travailler ensemble pour améliorer les soins de longue durée. Il y a des provinces qui ont déjà fait beaucoup pour s'assurer que leurs établissements soient sécuritaires. Je pense notamment au travail fait ici en Colombie-Britannique. Et au Québec, par exemple, le premier ministre Legault a augmenté les salaires et a formé et embauché des milliers de préposés supplémentaires au cours des derniers mois. C'est le genre de mesures qu'il faut continuer de prendre et de prendre partout au pays. I want to be clear that the federal government has no intention of starting to micromanage long-term care. That is a provincial responsibility. But I do know one thing. We all agree that as a country, we need to do better by our seniors. So to support provinces and territories, we'll invest $9 billion to continue addressing the shortfalls in Canada's long-term care sector. It's clear to everyone in the field and to families that have loved ones they worry about that the conditions of work in long-term care become the conditions of care for our seniors. So through investments and work with provinces and territories, we're committed to raising the minimum wage for personal support workers across the country to at least $25 an hour. On top of that, we'll invest to help train up to 50,000 more personal support workers so that people don't have to do endless overtime shifts. And to the personal support workers who've been on the front lines of this pandemic, truly, you are our heroes. Thank you. You've been there for seniors and for families. And as a government, we'll continue to be there for you. So that's what we're doing on staffing. That's how we'll make sure that better conditions of work lead to better conditions of care. But we're not stopping there. Our investments will allow us to create more beds, improve facilities, and increase infection prevention. We'll develop legislation collaboratively to ensure that seniors are guaranteed the care they deserve, no matter where they live across the country. And because provinces have different realities, we'll work together to make sure that everyone gets the support they need. We'll also co-develop and invest in a comprehensive, distinctions-based Indigenous long-term and continuing care framework. That's important. For seniors who can and choose to live at home, we're there for you too. We'll better support you by doubling the home accessibility tax credit to $20,000. With up to an additional $1,500 back in your pocket, you'll be able to make more home improvements you need, like installing a guardrail or widening a door frame. This is real change that you can count on, and it's real change we have to fight for. We know the Conservative Party won't support the workers who care for our parents and grandparents. We know they're not going to get the big things done. No bigger thing out there than making sure Canadians are safe right now, and they don't even think that everyone getting on a plane or a train should be vaccinated, or even that their own candidates should all be vaccinated. That's unacceptable. We need to keep stepping up to support Canadians, to protect Canadians, to get through this and beyond. Our Liberal government will always be there for you. And that's why this election is so important. We can't let the Conservative Party take Canada back, because backwards won't secure our future. C'est le moment pour faire un choix clair pour notre avenir. Les Canadiens veulent un gouvernement qui est là pour les gens et pour les travailleurs. Et nous, au Parti libéral, on va continuer à développer des vraies solutions qui fonctionnent pour tout le monde. Pour tout savoir sur comment voter par la poste maintenant, rendez-vous sur le site libéral.ca/poste. Real solutions to the real problems we face. This is our future to choose, and this is your time to choose it. That's why I'm asking you to stand with us. Vote for real, ambitious leadership, for strong health care and long-term care, for a clean environment and good jobs, for reconciliation and for a fairer Canada for everyone. Whether you mail in your ballot or head to the polls in person, make your voice heard, have your say. You can go to liberal.ca/mail to find out how you can vote right now. And together, let's move forward for everyone. Merci tout le monde. Je suis maintenant heureux de prendre vos questions.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Trudeau. Thank you, Mr. Trudeau. We'll now be taking 20 minutes of questions. One question, one follow-up. Une question, un suivi. On commence avec Radio-Canada.
Bonjour, Monsieur Trudeau. Louis Blouin, Radio-Canada. Vous parlez de salaire des préposés, de formation des préposés. J'entends déjà vos adversaires vous accuser d'avoir les deux pieds dans les compétences des provinces. Pourquoi ne pas simplement augmenter les transferts en santé et laisser les provinces décider des choix qui sont bons pour leur population?
Je pense que d'abord, tous les Canadiens à travers le pays reconnaissent que nous devons faire mieux pour nos aînés. Nous devons être là. On a vu trop de tragédies. Et le gouvernement fédéral sera là pour appuyer les provinces dans le travail qu'ils vont faire. Mais comme on a fait pour l'entente sur la petite enfance et les garderies, nous allons fixer des cibles comme 25 $ de l'heure et nous allons signer des accords avec les provinces pour achever, pour arriver à ces objectifs. On a démontré qu'on peut travailler avec des provinces, même avec des provinces avec qui on a des différends, pour livrer concrètement pour les Canadiens. Et il n'y a pas personne à travers le pays qui veut pas que nos aînés soient protégés ou qui vivent à travers le pays. C'est pour ça que le gouvernement fédéral va être là avec 9 milliards de dollars en travaillant avec les provinces, en respectant leur juridiction, mais en s'assurant que partout au pays, nos aînés soient protégés.
M. Trudeau, votre camp accuse Erin O'Toole de limiter l'accès à l'aide médicale à mourir, l'accès à l'avortement à cause de sa position sur la liberté de conscience. Vous avez certains de vos propres députés, actuels ou passés, qui ont défendu la liberté de conscience des médecins. Je serais curieux d'avoir votre position parce qu'on n'a toujours pas votre plateforme électorale, alors on ne peut pas la connaître. Vous, qu'est-ce que vous pensez de cet enjeu-là? Est-ce que vous pensez qu'il faut encadrer la liberté de conscience des médecins pour maintenir des services en avortement, maintenir des services d'aide médicale à mourir?
Je pense qu'on voit qu'encore une fois, il y a quelque chose d'assez fondamental que Erin O'Toole ne comprend pas. La liberté de choix, être pro-choix, ce n'est pas une question de choix pour les médecins, c'est une question de choix pour les femmes. Des leaders doivent être sans équivoque là-dessus, et Erin O'Toole ne l'est pas. Il dit encore une chose à certains groupes et le contraire à d'autres. C'est inacceptable. I think it's clear that there's something fundamental that Erin O'Toole doesn't understand. Pro-choice doesn't mean the freedom of doctors to choose. It means the freedom of women to choose. Leaders have to be unequivocal on that. And once again, Erin O'Toole is not, and he's saying certain things to some people and it's opposite to others. That's not good enough.
Thank you. Next question.
David Aiken, Global News. Good morning, Prime Minister. I want to talk about the recommendations by Justice Fish. I think in your promise tracker on Saturday, you promised to enable a, quote, governance committee to essentially transfer investigations from the military to civilians. The key question is that people in the military, people in Esquimalt, naval people, want to know when will you stop having military men investigating their buddies, military men? When will civilians take over those investigations?
No, thank you, David. This is an issue that matters deeply to all Canadians, but particularly to those who choose to serve in the armed forces and family members who have daughters or sons who've stepped up to serve in the military. We need to make sure that the culture of the military changes for the better, that the pattern of looking away from unacceptable actions, from intolerance that we've seen time and time again, unfortunately, that is, quite frankly, not worthy of the people who step up to serve their country. They deserve better. All Canadians deserve better, which is why we took significant steps over the past years, why we are doing more. We are accepting the recommendations of Justice Fish. We're moving forward and putting Lieutenant General Carignan in place so that She can make changes on the inside, but we're also tasking Louise Arbour to come back with recommendations immediately and in the medium term. So how we can actually transform our culture in the military so that it is worthy of every man and woman who serves in the military.
I want to talk about also your government's record on building enough affordable housing units. There have been reports, PCO, I think, criticizing your government for not doing enough, not building the units you wanted to build. How will you remove barriers, and what are your benchmarks in another government to build more affordable housing units?
First of all, it is unacceptable that far too many people in this country can't afford their homes, particularly young people wanting to get their start. They've seen the price of houses, not just in places like Victoria and the Lower Mainland and Toronto, but right across the country, get too far out of reach for everyone. We have done an awful lot over the past 6 years from a standing start because, as you will all remember, the previous Conservative government didn't feel that the federal government had any role to play in housing. Well, we knew that was wrong, so we put forward the $40 billion National Housing Strategy in 2017 and have done an awful lot of work with provinces, territories, municipalities, various partners, Indigenous communities to build housing. But yes, it's not enough. There is much more to do. And part of the pivotal reason we're having an election right now is because Canadians need to be able to choose how we build back better, how we move forward to end this pandemic and create better opportunities for everyone. And that includes significant new investments in housing that I'm looking forward to speaking about in the coming weeks.
Merci. Prochaine question.
Catherine Lévesque, La Presse canadienne. Bonjour, M. Trudeau. J'aimerais revenir sur l'annonce du jour. Comme mon collègue Louis l'a dit, vous parlez de salaire, vous parlez d'embauche de préposés aux bénéficiaires. Est-ce que vous menez une campagne provinciale en ce moment?
Je pense qu'on a démontré, les Canadiens ont démontré à travers cette pandémie, qu'ils s'attendent à mieux en termes d'appui pour nos aînés. On a dû envoyer des forces armées pour aider dans les centres de longue durée. Ce n'est pas ce qui devrait être en train de se passer au Canada. On le sait depuis longtemps qu'on a besoin d'améliorer la qualité de soins à travers le pays. Et oui, le Québec et d'autres provinces ont fait beaucoup pour améliorer la situation. Mais comme on a pu démontrer avec les accords sur les garderies et la petite enfance qu'on est en train de signer à travers le pays, le gouvernement fédéral peut être là en tant que partenaire pour aider à financer les améliorations que nous savons tous sont nécessaires dans les conditions de travail qui vont mener à de meilleures conditions de vie pour les aînés. C'est pour ça que, comme on a fait pour les garderies et les centres de petite enfance, on va travailler avec les provinces pour s'assurer que les préposés soient mieux payés, que les centres de longue durée ont les ressources nécessaires et que, à travers le pays, tous nos aînés vont être bien protégés, où que soit la municipalité dans laquelle ils vivent.
Ensuite, vous parlez de l'exemple des garderies, mais si je prends Québec, par exemple, qui avait déjà son système de garderie, ça a été peut-être plus facile à négocier à cause de ça. Ça a été sans condition, mais vous savez très bien que vous entrez dans un bras de fer avec Québec en particulier, peut-être d'autres provinces avec ces normes nationales en santé. Qu'est-ce que vous allez faire finalement pour faire en sorte que ça s'applique et pourquoi ne pas tout simplement juste hausser les transferts en santé et laisser les provinces faire le travail?
Tout d'abord, avec les garderies, oui, on s'entendait déjà très, très bien avec Québec et d'ailleurs, on s'est inspiré du système québécois pour l'amener à travers le pays. Alors oui, ça a été des conversations plutôt faciles avec le Québec parce qu'on était très d'accord. Mais avec d'autres provinces, même des provinces qui ont signé ces accords de transfert sur les garderies, les gouvernements qui n'étaient pas nécessairement alignés avec nous ont su s'aligner pour pouvoir avoir justement ces fonds pour améliorer les situations pour les familles. Et on sait que les Canadiens d'un bout à l'autre de ce pays veulent de meilleures qualités de soins pour les aînés, et c'est exactement ce qu'on va s'assurer en respect, en partenariat parce que c'est trop important pour ne pas le faire. C'est ce qu'on a appris pendant la pandémie. Par rapport au transfert en santé, effectivement, on va être là. Comme je l'ai dit, on a été là avec 8 $ sur 10 d'appui pour les provinces, les individus pendant cette pandémie. On a transféré des milliards de dollars pour aider dans le court terme dans le système de santé. Et comme je l'ai promis bien souvent, on va augmenter les transferts de santé parce qu'on sait qu'il y a plus de besoins en sortant de cette pandémie.
Thank you. Next question.
Rachel Aiello, CTV News. You're attacking the Conservatives today over their position on conscience rights. However, in your legislation on assisted dying, you protected doctors' freedom of choice, of conscience. If the concern now is doctor referrals, why haven't you and would a Liberal government move legislation to further enshrine abortion rights?
I think it's very clear that the Conservative Party, once again, doesn't understand what pro-choice actually means. Pro-choice isn't the power for doctors to choose. It's the power for women to choose. And that is what we are going to continue to defend unequivocally. And quite frankly, the Conservatives have demonstrated time and time again that they will not.
Following up.
With respect, you didn't answer the question. If you want to, you could. On another social issue, yesterday you visited a riding where your candidate is campaigning off of the Conservative MPs there's position on conversion therapy. However, your government also played a role in that bill not passing. What do you have to say to the LGBT community folks who could have spent this summer in conversion therapy because your government failed to keep its promise?
I think people know well that every step of the way, the Conservative Party blocked the House of Commons and our government's efforts to ban conversion therapy. It is a shame that the Conservatives continue to get the big things wrong. When it comes to protecting our LGBT community, they need to step up instead of continuing to hide behind ideologies and allow conversion therapy to continue. But on other big things, they're getting it wrong too. Nothing is as important as keeping Canadians safe through the end of this pandemic and beyond. And it's unimaginable that they will not take the simple step of requiring anyone who boards a train or an airplane to be fully vaccinated. That's about protecting Canadians, and they don't get it. And what's more, they're even hiding the status of their candidates. Aaron O'Toole won't come clean with which candidates he is putting forward to represent Canadians who won't get vaccinated. That's simply not where Canadians are. It's not getting the big things right. We will continue to do the big things to protect Canadians. Conservatives have yet again demonstrated that as politicians, they're unwilling to do that.
Following up.
Good morning, Ashley Burke, CBC News. There are many countries that are trying to get planes into Afghanistan right now. What exactly have been the logistical challenges that Canada's been facing on the ground to get planes back into the country that it's taken this amount of time to do so? And do you believe that the majority of the 6,000 people that are on Canada's list to get out of Afghanistan, that you can get the majority of them out?
The difficulty right now is the safety of personnel and the security of planes flying in and out. And that's why over the past few days there have been far fewer flights than people had hoped. But now that the airport is back under American and international control, we are able to fly in regularly with Canadian military aircraft to ensure airlift of people out there. The limit, however, is not on Canadian capacity, on Canadian space and airlifts. The limit on getting people out is the fact that the Taliban continue to block access for Afghans wishing to flee the country. We are going to be there with aircraft, with spaces on aircraft to bring people to safety. But unless the Taliban shift their posture significantly, which is something the international community and Canada are working on, it is going to be very, very difficult to get many people out. We will get some, certainly. But to get many people out, as many as we'd want, is going to be almost impossible in the coming weeks. But that's why we will continue to work with partners in the region, work in ways to try and get as many people out as quickly as possible from this terrible situation.
En français, s'il vous plaît.
Depuis plusieurs jours, la situation à Kaboul était tellement difficile que ça a été extrêmement problématique d'envoyer des avions pour ramener des individus. Depuis une journée, l'aéroport est redevenu sous contrôle et en sécurité, et donc le Canada va être en train d'envoyer régulièrement des avions pour faire un aller-retour. Le défi, c'est pas la capacité dans les avions canadiens et de nos partenaires. Le défi, c'est que les gens ont énormément de difficultés de se rendre à l'aéroport parce que les talibans sont en train de bloquer l'accès. Donc, nous allons avoir énormément de difficultés à pouvoir sortir tous les gens qu'on voudrait, et certainement tous les gens qui voudraient sortir dans les jours et les semaines à venir, mais nous allons continuer de travailler autant que possible sur place et avec les pays avoisinants et dans la région pour essayer de sécuriser et de ramener au Canada le plus grand nombre de gens possible.
Following up.
According to eyewitness reports who are on the ground in Kabul this morning, the Taliban is not stopping the exodus of people leaving. They're not getting in the way of the today, but people do not have Canadian visas, and that's what's holding this up. Why isn't the government getting people that are on their list onto planes, finishing the biometrics and paperwork later? And also the British and French allies, they have specific military teams who are on the ground in Kabul, getting people from safe houses to the airport and onto planes. Is Canada doing that? And if not, why not?
Yes, Canada has personnel on the ground now and will have more personnel arriving later today to help with the processing, to help ensure that anyone who can make it to the airport and is on the many lists that Canada has is given all the help that they can. It is an extremely difficult situation, but I can assure you that I and our ministers and our government is working extremely hard to ease all the barriers, whether they be around paperwork or bureaucratic, to ensure that people are getting out of there as quickly as possible and to safety. Nous allons avoir des membres des forces armées et des Canadiens sur le sol. Ils sont là présentement. Il va y en avoir d'autres qui vont arriver plus tard aujourd'hui pour aider avec le processus de transport des citoyens et des Afghans qui peuvent quitter l'Afghanistan. Nous allons continuer de travailler pour faciliter cette tâche-là. Les barrières bureaucratiques, la paperasse, on est en train d'essayer de minimiser ça pour que justement on puisse sauver le plus grand nombre de gens possible, le plus rapidement possible.
Merci. Prochaine question.
Marika Walsh with the Globe and Mail. Three times this week, your government has notified reporters about the flights starting. You're saying again today they're starting, but they haven't started yet. Now you're saying they might not be full. And meantime, it's Thursday, the window is closing. The US, Germany, France, the Netherlands, Spain have all already had flights going this week. Why is it that Canada was not able to?
First of all, many of those international flights have been leaving Afghanistan and leaving the Kabul airport not full. There are real challenges and impediments on the ground in terms of getting people out, even though there is a clear wish, obviously, by Canada and by countries around the world to get as many people out to safety as possible. The situation on the ground is extremely complex, extremely difficult, but I can assure you that Canada, our forces, and our personnel are working as hard as they can every single day to get people out of Afghanistan.
Following up.
Yesterday, you said that bureaucracy is not the reason why Afghans who helped Canada can't get to the airport. You blame the Taliban, but that's the opposite of what we are hearing from the people on the ground. They and their supporters in Canada say they're being met by bureaucratic silence, by a void, by delays from your government. Why is it that you won't acknowledge that? And what is your message to them about your own accountability, that now that the flights are coming, they'll be empty because they don't have their paperwork in place?
First of all, I can't imagine what family members of Afghan citizens over there who just desperately want to come to Canada are feeling right now. The past days, the past weeks have been horrific in how quickly things have changed, how devastating it is for people on the ground and around the world who are worried about their loved ones. So I can understand their fears, their anxiety, their concern. I was pleased to be able to engage and have ministers engage with leaders within the Afghan-Canadian community yesterday evening. We will continue to do everything we can. And I am sure that we are able to do even more, and we will continue to work to reduce those barriers. There are phone calls being made, there are outreaches, there are exceptions being made. We are focused on trying to get people out of there as quickly as possible. But the situation is incredibly difficult on the ground in Kabul, as these individuals and family members can attest to. And we will continue to work diligently, day and night, with allies, with partners, and with folks on the ground to try and get as many people out to safety as quickly as possible.
Thank you. Next question.
Good morning, Prime Minister. A more open-ended foreign policy question from me. What do you think the biggest challenges will be for Canadian foreign policy over the next 4 years, and why do you think you're the best person to tackle them?
I think we're seeing a world that has been changing very, very rapidly over the past years. Obviously, when we gathered a few weeks ago for the G7 in Cornwall, foreign policy issues that Canadians are concerned about were echoed by our partners from around the world. Concerns, first and foremost, about this global pandemic and its impact on families right around the globe, and the responsibility we have to both finish with this pandemic first and foremost and get everyone else out of this pandemic as well, and prevent future pandemics. That's going to require a level of coordination, stronger institutions, strengthened accountability, these kinds of things that the global community is certainly going to work on. And Canada, that has, because Canadians have stepped up, managed this pandemic significantly better than many of our partner countries, will continue to have an important role in making sure that people around the world are kept healthy. Further than that, we've seen transformative shifts in power balances around the world. The rise of China, the disruption of Russia, the very, very real challenges in a multipolar global world, where Canada and Canadian values and voices are more important than ever before. We will continue to make sure we're creating prosperity for Canada and for Canadians in a complex world, while at the same time standing strong for our values against those, whether it's China or others, who seek to undermine those values, to undermine the world, their rules-based international order, because Canadians have increasingly understood that what happens around the world does have direct impacts on Canada.
Following up?
Unrelated, actually, but on taxes and past campaigns, you have promised not to raise taxes on the middle class. I'm wondering if you're going to recommit to not raising tax on middle class again.
What we've seen throughout this pandemic and throughout the past years are Canadians increasingly worried about affordability. The cost of living is rising. Housing is a real challenge. Families are facing increasing pressures, which is why over the past number of years, we focused on making life more affordable for Canadians. We raised taxes on the wealthiest 1% so we could lower them for the middle class. We delivered hundreds of dollars a month tax-free to millions of families across the country with the Canada Child Benefit, measures that lifted over 400,000 kids out of poverty. At the same time as we created 1 million jobs over the first few years of our government, we lifted over 1 million people out of poverty in this country. Our focus is on supporting the middle class and people working hard to join it, and that will always be it. We're not interested in making life more expensive. We're interested in making it more affordable. So whether it's our measures on housing or our measures on childcare, those are examples of the kinds of things we'll be talking about throughout this campaign to make life more affordable for Canadians. And it's a very clear contrast with the Conservatives, who are putting forward a rolling back of our childcare agreements with the provinces, turning their backs on $10 a day childcare in favor of boutique tax credits that won't create a single space and won't improve the quality of those spaces right across the country. Conservatives are simply wrong about how we start up this economy, how we get people working for a better Canada. A big part of it is recognizing that this pandemic has hit women far harder than men. The fact that Erin O'Toole and the Conservatives don't understand that is yet another example of them getting the big things wrong for Canadians.
Next question.
Mia Rabson from the Canadian Press. So you're offering billions of dollars for long-term care here today. You're talking about negotiations and agreements with provincial governments, but you've also told them that they have to wait till after the pandemic to negotiate a new healthcare transfer. Why are these discussions about long-term care funding not part of that agreement? Why aren't you negotiating that long-term healthcare transfer now?
I look forward to sitting down with the provinces to talk about their needs on long-term care and on health transfers. It is clear, and I have said it many times, that our country needs to invest more in health, and the federal government will be there to increase the Canada health transfer. How we do that, what kind of objectives we're looking for, how we ensure that Canadians get the best quality of care is at the heart of the discussions that we need to have with those provinces. And that's why our initiative on long-term care recognizes that the way to ensure conditions of care for elders across the country is to ensure conditions of work for the people caring for them. That's why our announcement today is going to raise the salary for personal support workers to at least $25 an hour, invest in training new personal support workers, and do so in the same approach that we took for childcare, working with the provinces, understanding their different perspectives and different realities, but on shared goals to make sure our elders are protected right across the country. We will bring that same reflection to work on improving our healthcare systems for all right across the country.
Following up.
And back to Afghanistan. We are hearing, you're talking about getting rid of some of the red tape and doing what you can to get people on planes, but we're hearing some of that red tape includes telling people who are fully vaccinated that they need to have negative COVID tests before they get on the plane. Are there not simple, basic things that you can say right now, we're going to get you on the plane, we'll process you later? Why is that? Why are these so hard to set aside?
We are working very closely with officials. Our ministers continue to push to remove barriers. I hadn't heard that one. We will follow up to see if that is indeed the case, because that seems to be something fairly straightforward that we should be able to take care of. Our focus on this is getting as many people out as quickly as possible. We will continue to stay focused on that.
We'll take one last question.
Mr. Trudeau, Rob Buffum with CTV News, Vancouver Island. As you know, the opioid crisis has hit BC harder than anywhere else. The province and cities like Victoria and Vancouver have pushed for decriminalizing street drugs. I'd like to know, yes or no, if your party is elected, will you decriminalize street drugs? And failing that, would you create an exemption for the province?
Our health ministers in BC and federally have worked closely together on this issue. I've had direct conversations with Premier Horgan where, like on so many things, we are totally aligned. I'm very interested in working with the province of British Columbia around exceptions and exemptions to move forward to make sure that we're doing everything we can to protect people from the devastating impacts of the opioid crisis. But I think, as we've all learned over the past many years, there is no one silver bullet for ending the opioid crisis. It takes a better approach on availability of safe alternative and prescription drugs so people can get through it with a safer supply. It takes more safe consumption spaces, which this government has led the way on and we will continue to. It takes more support for frontline workers and heroes who've been there to help the hardest hit areas. It takes measures at the border. It takes measures working with international partners. We are working on all those things. And yes, we will continue to work with BC on measures that the BC government feel are right for British Columbians. British Columbia, in so many ways, has led the way on so many strong initiatives to keep people safe that as a federal government and as a son and grandson of BC, I'm always proud to be able to work with this progressive and forward-thinking government.
Following up.
You've opened the borders to vaccinated Americans by way of the land and air, But when it comes to the marine border, that's not open to ferries. So things like the Clipper that takes tourists from Seattle to Victoria are not able to come. There's no timeline for that. And the tourism industry is getting hammered by that. Can you tell us, if your party is elected, when would you open the marine border to ferries? And would it be as late as November 1st, which is the cruise ship deadline?
I can certainly assure you that it is an issue we are working on directly. I know how important it is for folks here on the island to have ferry service directly to the United States. It isn't something that we have the capacity at this exact moment to manage safely. And of course, the safety of Canadians needs to be first and foremost. That's what we've always done as Canadians, but we are working to increase that capacity and hope to see positive things come in the not too distant future. We are working quickly on that, but we have to make sure we're keeping Canadians safe. And that has guided us throughout this pandemic, doing whatever is necessary to keep Canadians safe. That's why it's so disappointing to see the Conservative Party won't even take the simple measure of ensuring that anyone who boards a train or a plane be fully vaccinated. That's why it's so disappointing that they won't even tell Canadians which of their candidates aren't fully vaccinated. This is a time where we need to be there for each other. We need to step up for each other. We need to be honest with Canadians. And yet again, the Conservative Party is not doing that.
Merci beaucoup. C'est ce qui m'a fait la conférence de presse aujourd'hui. This is what I'm still expressing.
Merci tout le monde.